We're starting a show now called The Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com. The theme of today's show, Yom Kippur and forgiveness. We start the show with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called Jews. Then I play the second part of an interview I did with John at New Spirit Recovery Center, a wonderful detox clinic in Encino. And then some thoughts by me, Mystic Pete, on Yom Kippur and forgiveness. Music and words by Nachum. And the underbed music you hear playing through some of the show is my music called Open Hand. Stay tuned.
The first Jew I ever met was Mrs. Addlestone. She was a substitute teacher in the 10th grade. Our regular teacher got sick early in the fall, and Mrs. Addlestone was hired for the rest of the school year. My friend Alfred Morris told me to be sure and wish her Merry Christmas on the last day of school before the winter break. I asked why, and he told me Mrs. Addlestone was a Jew. I asked, what is a Jew? Alfred said, Jews don't believe in Jesus. This was the first time I'd ever heard that. This was my introduction to Judaism. I was raised a Baptist. I thought everyone was a Baptist, or at least a Methodist. We didn't have a lot of Jews in Macon, I thought. As it turns out, we did. There were Orthodox, Reform, and Conservative temples in Macon. I just didn't know it. When I got to the University of Georgia, there were a lot of Jews there. Names like Stein, Goldberg, Hoffman, Abrams started showing up in my class and in my study group. It's easy to see why the Jews are considered the chosen people. Most of the Jews in my classes were smart. I joined SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, at UGA. Lots of Jews in SDS. Once I graduated from the University of Georgia and got into the concert promotion industry, I started working with Jews. Lots of Jewish agents in the music business. Names like Wally Meyerowitz, Alan Fry, Shelley Schultz, Rob Light. All nice guys and a lot of fun. The transition to the record business was easy and once again filled with Jews. Cliff Bernstein hired me at Mercury Records in the mid-1970s, and I worked for Stan Bly, the head of promotion, and Irwin Steinberg, the CEO. Jules Abramson and Charlie Fash were up the food chain at Mercury, and Harry Losk was my sales guy. Let me say, I have had Jewish bosses and Gentile bosses. I had much rather work for members of the tribe. Jewish bosses knew that their inventory took the elevator every night. They treated their employees well. The staff was treated like contributors. The Gentiles, not so much. The staff was a cost to be paid as little as possible and to be worked as hard as possible. Bob Krasnow at Elektra Records was the greatest boss I ever had. He knew how to have fun, and he recognized executive talent, and he was willing to pay for it. Once I started dating Jewish women, it was all over. Jewish women have a joy of life that is missing in Gentile women. Most Jewish women live for right now, today. Gentile women are planning for the afterlife. I married a Jewish woman, and we have two wonderful Jewish children. Both kids are bar and bat mitzvahed. Our household is not that observant. We don't keep bacon in the refrigerator, but I think that is more because my wife and kids are vegetarians more than the fact that they are Jews. There are differences between Jews and Gentiles, and it's not just the Jesus thing. Gentiles leave and don't say goodbye. Jews say goodbye and don't leave. This is a stereotype that is based in fact. I will sneak out of a party and not say goodbye. Lori will say goodbye at a party, and we will be standing around for another hour. It has gotten to the point that I will say goodbye when we arrive at the party, just to establish the timeline that we would be leaving the party at some point. Well, this hasn't happened since COVID-19 came on the scene, but you know what I mean. At a Gentile dinner party, if all the food is consumed, it's a good thing. The food was good, it was all eaten. At a Jewish dinner party, if all the food is consumed, it is a disaster. Someone went home hungry. At the repast after my father-in-law's funeral, his friends descended on platters from Jerry's Deli and inhaled the Lox Nova white fish and egg salad. The bagels evaporated. Lori was mortified. The look on her face was one of horror. One of her friends was quickly dispatched to Jerry's to bring more platters, sufficient to the point that two unopened platters were given to the homeless the next day. Disaster averted. The Bible I grew up with, the King James Version, has a New Testament and an Old Testament. If you have never read the book of Leviticus in the Old Testament, do yourself a favor. If you want to get downright medieval, read Leviticus. You will not find anything like that in the New Testament. The Old Testament God seems to be a bad dude. The New Testament God is pretty much a likable fellow. The Jewish God was a great salesperson and recognizer of sales talent. He convinced Abraham to cut off the end of his penis, and then Abraham had to go and convince the rest of the members of the tribe to do likewise. Hey guys, I just had a conversation with God, and you're not going to believe what he told us we have to do. End quote. Now, that had to be a tough sales conversation. Jews are still doing this ritual circumcision today. Our son Ari was circumcised at 8 days of age, as is the Jewish ritual. My Gentile father had the honor of holding Ari while the circumcision was performed by the moil. In addition to Ari peeing all over my father, my dad thought this was the most barbaric thing he had ever witnessed, and he grew up on a farm in Georgia. Lastly, I'm still a Christian. I love Jesus. He's my main man. When I first walked onto the Loyola Marymount campus, I saw a manger scene, the Nativity, and I thought, these are my people. I felt at home. That said, the Jewish pastry Ruglach calls to me all year long. I make very good challah, and I speak more Yiddish than my Jewish wife, one of the many benefits of working in the entertainment business. My view is that Jesus is the most famous Jew and is not a bad carpenter. It is a family tradition.
It is September 2nd, 2021. This is the second edition of my interview with John. We are at a drug recovery center. We went deep last time, talked about, well, some difficult journeys of your life. You were very honest. People were very touched and moved by your stories, and they want to hear more. You got into using because you wanted to fit in. Yep. You know, that very traditional kind of
wanted to fit in, and then it kind of just became habit, and then it became life for me. That's what it all came down to. I start when I'm 18. When I was 18, it's a good part to fit in. I always got into a lot of legal trouble when I was younger. I'm talking about terrorist threats. I'm talking about brandishing weapons. I'm talking about breaking and entering. You know, typical crap that I did to get whatever I can. Burglary, robbery, whatever I could do to get high.
You were breaking into houses. Mm-hmm. You were a thief. You were a criminal. Mm-hmm. You were robbing people.
Yeah.
You were the guy that we don't like.
I'm the guy you watch out for.
Jeez.
I was the guy you'd lock your doors for because of, you know, bars on windows. My grandma got bars on her windows because she was afraid I was going to break into her house and steal something from her.
Your grandma, hold on, let's just get this straight. Your grandma got bars on her windows because she thought you were going to break in and steal from her.
Yeah.
Ow.
Yeah. And I didn't care. I mean, I stole from everybody. I stole every tool my dad ever owned. I stole my mom's wedding ring. I robbed my best friend of everything him and his family owned.
Jeez.
Everything. I'm talking about, I broke into this guy's house in the middle of the night one night and took TVs, furniture, guns, bow and arrows, crossbows, whatever had value, I took.
And what do you do with this stuff? You find a fence.
Found a fence. Found somebody to sell it to.
And they give you a penny on the dollar.
Somewhere around there. And
or they give you a bag for some crap.
I saw it.
For
I saw
a gun.
I sold everything for about 15 grand and ended up getting roughly, I spent about 5 grand of it on drugs and the other 10 grand I split between the people that helped me.
You feel like you were a good thief?
I was, but I ended up getting caught.
You were a good thief?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy being a thief?
I did. At the time, I did.
Like, it feels good to be able to, like, be a rebel, to break the law, to break in, take what you want.
To get whatever I wanted, that felt good, like the adrenaline, the thrill of, like, being in and out of the house in the span of, like, 5-10 minutes. To get whatever I wanted.
You just take what you want.
Take whatever I could see.
It's power.
It is. It's very powerful.
I appreciate you admitting it.
But it's very risky, and it's high reward for high risk.
High reward, high risk.
And I ended up getting caught, and I ran. Cops on my ass.
Chasing you down.
Chasing me down.
Oh, they're running after you.
Yep.
What was that like? Tackled you? Shot you?
No, I got away.
Oh.
I got away. I've been running from the cops for 6 years.
Oh, this is still... Yeah. This one's still active.
Still active. Been running from the cops since 2015.
Whew. But didn't you say you got arrested also?
I've been arrested in Florida a couple of times.
Okay.
And California wouldn't come get me. California would not come extradite me.
Oh.
So I ended up staying in Florida for years, you know, and I turned the straight and narrow. You know, I stopped robbing people and I stopped breaking the law, but I continued to get high. But I worked for my own money and got high.
I think a lot of people enjoy being criminals. They enjoy the rush. They enjoy the feeling of power over others, taking what they want. What they don't like is getting caught for being criminals.
And the consequence.
Yeah. They're so sorry now. No, you're not sorry. Mm-hmm. You enjoyed beating the world. You just don't want to. Yeah, you don't want to pay the consequences.
It's like, looking back at it sober, yes, well, I was wrong for everything I did, and I do apologize, and I am wrong, you know, for everything I did, and I am sorry for what I did, but at the time, I wasn't.
At the time, it was a fast life.
It was, if I can outget you, I will.
It was power.
Yeah.
Did you ever rob people personally?
Not person to person, no.
Okay, no, like a stick up.
I never stuck anybody up. I never put a gun to somebody's head and said, give me what's in your wallet. I did a lot of credit card fraud and a lot of check fraud.
Jeez, dude.
But I never...
You were the guy.
If I had your credit card number, you lost every penny in your account. And That's what I did. That's how I got money. And that's how I kept my drug use going.
I guess if the next level of evil is putting a gun to people and taking their wallets, which you didn't do.
Never crossed that line. I couldn't physically make myself rob somebody's person. Like, I had opportunities, but I never took them.
You have standards.
No. No standards. I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't find myself to actually rob somebody physically.
You have to be a kind of a beast to do that. To look them in the eye, see their fear and terror, know they're going to be traumatized for the rest of their life.
Yeah, I can do it. I'd rather get you while you were asleep in the house.
So you don't have to actually terrorize an individual.
Yeah, terrorize them, hurt them if I had to.
Right, because if they resist, now you have to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
You have to stick the knife in their ribs.
Yeah. And I wasn't doing that.
But, you know, I know people who've had their house robbed, and that's plenty traumatizing, feeling like your abode, your sanctuary has been violated.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty traumatic.
It is.
You know, but some of them may be, you know, off, I don't know, cutting down old growth forests. I mean, like mm-hmm. everybody's up to some kind of crap.
Yeah.
We don't like being hurt ourselves, but we can overlook the immoral or criminal behavior that we're doing. Or they're selling crap. They're selling crap people don't need. They're selling junk that hurts people. Supplements that are toxic. And, you know, they're just fine with that. And they've made all kinds of excuses and justifications for making money at the expense of other people with shoddy or dangerous products.
Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of salespeople who are just monsters too, but they're okay. They're sometimes idolized. They're great salespeople. Yeah, and you've just destroyed people's lives by taking all their money and giving them junk.
Yeah.
So what's worse? A company who sells some kind of product that hurts a lot of people just a little bit so they don't know about it, or hurting one person a whole lot all at once? Who's worse? I'm sorry, I'm ranting.
You're okay. You're okay.
Comparing a guy who steals from houses to our illustrious salespeople in the world. But, you know, I think criminals can be idolized and worshipped. I mean, we do look at Escobar and drug dealers and like make movies about them and how cool it is, or mafioso guys, and we want to be like them sometimes. And we're talking right now about this kind of power trip we're all on.
Thought it was God.
Yeah. Sometimes it's legitimate, sometimes it's legal, sometimes it's a model we want to become in life because it makes a lot of money, and sometimes it's under the law.
Yeah.
And, oh, that's a bad criminal over there stealing from people. But sometimes it's somebody just down on their luck and they're in a bad place and they're using drugs and they're really not being mindful and thinking about what they're doing.
I was out of it. I was 100% out of it. Sober me is not high me. Huh. Sober me would never rob anybody.
Huh.
High me doesn't care.
Do you feel like you're a good person?
Yes.
You have a good heart.
I have a good heart with a dark past. See, I don't like to be, I try not to be look at my past as who I am, because that's not who I am anymore. I don't rob you. I don't lie to people anymore. You know, I don't try to hurt people. I try to be a caring, loving person in any way I can. So I know that's not who I normally am. I'm not normally a mean thief, liar, cheater, you know, somebody like that. That's not me. It's just what I've done.
But we're all like, we all have our bad ones, and we all do awful things.
Yeah.
We've all done that.
Yeah.
When we're in a bad place, and then we justify it.
There's no justification for what I did. I did what I did.
Hmm.
You know, I
at least you got that.
Yeah.
There's plenty of people who are trying to tell stories about their evil past.
And justify.
Yeah, and just BS.
Yeah.
Where they're attacking the victims.
It's not their fault. If it wasn't for me and my drug use, then nobody, the people I robbed, places I robbed, would have never been robbed. By me, at least.
You know, in program, they talk about making amends. Have you thought about that?
I will eventually.
That's on the list.
Yeah, I have the rights to wrong. The wrongs to right. I have the wrongs to right. I have to go do. And that's going to be in due time when I get there. When I get to that portion of my life where I'm correcting everything I did wrong in my past, or attempting to correct everything I did wrong in my past, yes, I will make amends for the houses that I've robbed. I'll make amends for the businesses I've robbed. I'll make amends for the people that I've done credit card fraud to, whichever ones I can.
You just emptied people's bank accounts.
Emptied quite a few.
Dude. Develop some skills along the way. You should be going to Wall Street. You'd be a stockbroker. You'll do great.
I've done.
That's what those guys do.
Yeah. Done a lot. I've emptied people's pockets.
Whew. I like what you're saying about your intention to make amends and do right. I mean, it does sound like you're a good person. Like, you do have a good heart. You went down some dark ways, did some really horrible things, but you're going to make it right. I mean, I wish everybody was at least in that place. At least they care, like, at least caring about it.
I'm going to attempt to make things right. I can only clean my half of the street. I can't clean. If I go to make amends with somebody for robbing them, I can't fix how they react. I can't make them react the right way. They can tell me to get the hell off the property. But at least I tried.
Well, and you may not actually be able to literally make amends to those people, yeah, but you can
pay them back.
Or you can do general good works in society to improve,
yeah,
the world. In a larger arc, you can help the world.
Whatever way I possibly can, if it works, it'll work.
Yeah. That's a pretty strong moral stance, John. I applaud you. I really like what you're saying. I think it's a real decency. I think if everybody in the world was in that place, instead of justifying or excusing or ignoring or pretending it didn't happen, I think this would be a much more decent world, frankly.
Yeah, it would.
You said there was a lot of death around you.
Yeah, I lost. 2018 was a hard year. I lost animals, I lost family. Lost kids, you know. It was a very hard year of my life. January, I had a dog pass away. No, 2018.
Wait, January of 2018, you lost your dog.
I lost my dog.
And you were close to your dog.
Very close.
See, I don't think people who haven't had an animal, sometimes they don't realize just how deep that could go. What an important relationship you can have with a dog or a cat or a bird.
Yeah.
It can be profound. Mm-hmm. And there can be kind of a companionship and love that you don't feel with, like, anybody else.
Yeah. Sometimes you love animals more than people.
And when they die, it's traumatic.
It hurts, yeah. I already said my great-grandma. My dog, Ella, was January. My great-grandma, Gloria, in March 2018.
Close to her?
Her and I were pretty close.
Oh.
My grandma B in June of 2018. My mom in July of 2018.
Jeez.
Another dog, Raven, in October 2018. My daughter in November 2018.
Your daughter?
One of them. And then January of 2019, my grandma Susan passed away on the exact same date as Ella from the year before. My my dog Ella. So they passed. So within the span of 365 days, I lost 6-7 family members.
Brutal. But this has nothing to do with anything you did.
Nothing to do with that.
But it's just all this death suddenly rolled up in your life.
A lot.
Did all of that shift you in any way?
It's hard to describe. I stopped really caring for myself. Like, I stopped really believing in God. And I remember last time you and I talked about God a lot because he's very big for me.
Yeah.
And this time around, that when that occurred, God was nowhere in my life. I stopped talking to him. I stopped listening to him. I didn't care for him. He took away everybody. You know, the only family I really have left is my brother, my sister, and my dad. That's it. I have some cousins out there, a stray aunt here and there, but no close family, really.
Hmm. Do you ever feel any of the people who died, do you ever feel them with you, around you?
A lot. My mom a lot.
You feel her?
Usually around the time of her death, around July every year. Since then, I feel like she's with me. Because I know that's a hard time.
What does that feel like?
Warmth.
She's sending you kindness.
Yeah, just warmth and love.
Does it feel forgiving, like forgiving whatever mistakes were made?
There were a lot of mistakes made before she passed away. And so I would hope there is forgiveness there.
Yeah.
You know, I believe there is. I'm just not 100% sure.
Fair enough. You feel like she's maybe watching over you?
100%.
She's watching over you.
Yeah, she is. And it was a hard time. It's been 3 years.
Yeah. I would imagine if she is now an angel kind of being, you know, she ain't sweating the small stuff, right?
I mean, no, she's not sweating the small
stuff. Right? I mean, like, all the little this and that, you know, the rough and tumble of life in the bigger arc of life are just not really worth dwelling on.
No.
Well, so then after all this tragedy, the drug stuff started happening at 13, and then a few years later, just unrelenting grief. How did you all pull it together? I mean, now we're talking at a recovery facility. You found yourself here. You seem to be doing well. You're getting back on your feet. How did you find your way to recovery?
I started going to recovery in 2016, 2 years before my family passed away. I was going to AA. I was doing a lot of meetings. I got sober. I stayed sober for about a year.
It was on your mind?
It was on my mind. Stayed sober for a year, and I relapsed. And ever since then, I couldn't put more than like 6 months together.
And all the death probably just threw you, just knocked you down?
Knocked me down, and I stayed sober for like 3 months, relapsed, stayed sober for 3 months, relapsed, stayed sober for 5 months, relapsed, stayed sober for 6-7 months, relapsed. And then I ended up about 2 months ago calling this place and a friend of mine, telling them I needed to go to treatment. I can't stop smoking meth. I can't stop using crack. I can't stop snorting cocaine. I can't stop drinking. I need help. And I was just like, I wasn't physically exhausted, but I was like emotionally and like mentally tired and spiritually broken that I just needed the help.
It's like, you're done.
And I was done.
You're done with that life. It's just...
And so I went to a rehab up in Lancaster for 20-something days and then came here. And I've been here since for the past 20-something, 30-something days.
Does it feel like it's stabilizing you?
Yeah.
It's just a nice, friendly, supportive environment. Just press pause on all the wheels that were spinning out of control and just let you land in a safe place where you can gather yourself. I think that's sometimes all people need.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times there's just no way to get off. That if people have a off ramp, you know, they can find themselves and heal and pull themselves together. They just need that kind of safe space for a while. Yeah. And I guess this place has been that for you.
It has been a safe place. You know, that's why I'm sad to go, but I'm ready to go.
Uh-huh.
You know, sucks to leave, but at the same time, I'm ready to get on out of here.
Well, we'll catch up with you in 6 months or a year and see how things are going.
Oh, yeah.
Any final words?
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
This is Nahum. I am a singer-songwriter from Los Angeles, California. I grew up most of my life in Jerusalem, Israel, and I am absolutely grateful to be a part of the show today with Peter to give you and share with you some songs and context to the upcoming Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. So here's a few words, and feel free to drop by at my website at Soul Loves Music for any more content and music and videos and everything that comes with that. So here it is, Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, is considered the most important holiday in the Jewish faith. Falling in the month of Tishrei, which is generally September or October in our everyday calendar, it marks the culmination of the 10 days of awe, a period of introspection and repentance that follow Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. According to tradition, it is on Yom Kippur that God decides each person's fate. So Jews are encouraged to make amends and ask forgiveness for sins committed during the past year. The holiday is observed with a 25-hour fast and a special religious service. Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah are known as Judaism's high holy days. So that's a little bit of the background of Yom Kippur. On a personal note, I've been observing Yom Kippur pretty much my whole life. And I have many, many memories of going to synagogue with my father and brothers and mother and sister and my whole family and sitting through many inspiring services while fasting. This is a fast where you can't eat or drink for 25 hours. And the real bottom line of Yom Kippur is forgiveness, to ask for forgiveness from God, to ask for forgiveness from our loved ones, from people we love. And actually, traditionally, the forgiveness part is so important that if you ask for someone's forgiveness three times and they don't forgive you, then you are forgiven. If you really genuinely try and say sorry three times to someone, and I know we've all had some, you know, interactions with people where people got hurt, people felt bad. And in those interactions, if one is able to really dig deep and say, hey, you know what, I'm sorry, and really feel that, then forgiving is as important as asking for forgiveness. And sometimes just as hard. I really, really, truly hope that you will get inspired or at least learn something new from these few moments and songs that I'm going to share with you. And I wish people who are observing Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, a Gemar Chatima Tova, may all our fates be sealed in good and kind and loving experiences. This is Nachum. Take care, everybody. Be safe. Be forgiven. Be forgiving. The direct translation of the song and prayer Hayom Harat Olam is as follows. This day, the world was called into being. This day, all the creatures of the universe stand in judgment before thee. To give some context to this very meaningful prayer, I'd like to quote Rabbi Gordon Tucker. Our beautiful world has been buffeted by storms and disease more this year than any other in a century. During these days of awe, we have a chance to think of ourselves in the context of human history, of natural history, and of our own codes of behavior. It's a moment in which we look inside and, despite feeling humility about our insignificance, try to elevate ourselves by relating through awe to the majesty of creation. This song, just like these beautiful words of Rabbi Gordon Tucker, really takes out the inner poetry of creation and being. This song reaches your inside soul. This is Hayom Harat Olam.
Hayom Harat Olam. Hayom yamid b'mishpat kol yetzurei olam im kevanim rachmeinu kerachem av al banim ve'im כעבדים, עינינו לך תלויות, תלויות. דיני נאי נא 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 רחמנו כרחם אב על בנים, ואם כעבדים עינינו לך תלויות, תלויות. דירי נאי נא נא נאי נאי יו yo 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 hi didi rai da da rai hi yo 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 oh im kevanim rachme albanim veim kevadim einenu lecha tluyot tluyot.
Yom Kippur and forgiveness. We have a punitive God. Life is unfair. We are born sinners. We can only redeem ourselves through suffering. And Elvis is alive and well and living in Portland. Just checking to see if you're paying attention. Now let's move on to the truth. If God is inclined towards punishment, He could take the day off because we do the job so nicely ourselves. When we feel powerless, we hate ourselves. When we feel like we don't have the knowledge or ability to effectively meet a challenge, we hate ourselves. Self-hatred is self-punishment. A cloud of this emotional smog circles the earth, obscuring the heavenly lights. When we fail to stand up to an abuser, we not only hate them, we also hate ourselves for the failure to take a stand. Understandably, we bow down because we don't want to be fired, kicked out, or abandoned. We might want to tell our own boss where to go, but we refrain, knowing he would have his own travel plans for our immediate future, a one-way ticket out the door. When we trust our broker to invest our money wisely and find it's been stolen, certainly we hate that crook, but we also hate ourselves for being so naive. When we are unable to stop an illness from taking the life of a beloved, we may unreasonably condemn ourselves for being incapable of saving them. We may criticize ourselves for anything less than total omniscience and omnipotence.
We generate self-hatred to help us remember and learn from our mistakes. It brands our souls with each lesson we've suffered. There's little rhyme, reason, or rationality to this primitive psychology. All we can do is find ways to unravel the chaos. The bitter irony is that the last thing God wants is for us to hate ourselves. Yet in some twisted way, we do this for God. We hate ourselves to atone for our sins. We sentence ourselves to an internal prison to punish ourselves for our imperfection. We yell at the ugly reflection in the mirror to try to make it more beautiful. Redemption through suffering. I'm not saying that everyone has built themselves an inner torture chamber, although many have, but everyone suffers internal solitary confinement to some extent, all of it chosen. If you didn't, you'd be blasting love at every person you met. And when your wine cellar got low, change an occasional glass of water into a nicely aged cab. However, the self is sacred. What the hell are we doing punishing it? Is this any way to treat a sacred being? In the spiritual world, all is indeed love. There is no judgment, condemnation, or hatred. All is forgiven. We must emulate these qualities of spirit here on earth if we are to create a heaven on earth. We must practice love and forgiveness in order to heal ourselves. After all, if God finds us lovable, who are we to disagree? Forgiveness is being recognized as an important step towards healing. However, we shouldn't try to force ourselves to forgive others. In fact, an expectation that we should forgive those who have wronged us may further conflict us. Forgiving others happens spontaneously when we have resolved our own feelings. Don't worry about forgiving anyone else. The person you need to forgive is yourself. Forgiveness is the way out of self-hatred, self-judgment, and self-condemnation. It is the key that unlocks our self-created inner prisons, setting our battered psyche free. Self-forgiveness is our get-out-of-jail-free card. Well, it served a purpose when we were animals. The epoch of punishment-based learning is over. We no longer need self-punishment to evolve. We can now learn with the cruelty-free products of kindness and dignity. Self-hatred turns the bearers into victims, who then blame others. Victims ease their pain by pointing a finger at someone else, often the middle finger. It doesn't stop there. Pain relief is sought through vengeance. After all, a victim has been abused and is therefore entitled to get even, right? Beware of this impulse. Confucius said, "Before you embark on a journey of revenge, dig two graves, one for your victim and one for yourself." Feeling like a victim is so distressing that only intense distraction can mute the pain. Victims self-medicate with addictions, obsessions, zealotry, and ultranationalism. But wrapping yourself in a flag will not protect you from the bullet already lodged in your heart. For every way we hate or judge another, there's a paired internal feeling of self-hatred or judgment. Powerlessness creates this internal reflection. We see powerlessness as a sin, so we hate ourselves for this sin. A clever built-in feature of self-forgiveness is that one must fully acknowledge wrongdoing or perceived wrongdoing in order to forgive oneself. You can't get the blessing of forgiveness unless there is first a witnessing. A full inner confession must be signed. This private covenant is safely sealed in your heart. It must be signed and sealed for you to be delivered. Such admission lays the foundation for taking responsibility and performing rightful future action. Should we be condemned forever for our bad behavior, some of which is because we're lost or we're in pain? What about evil deeds we do intentionally? We may know fully well that something is wrong, but enjoy the sport or delight in the proceeds. Some religions profess that if you don't believe that their beliefs are correct, you will be eternally damned. Wouldn't 1,000 years of unending misery be punishment enough for merely not believing correctly? How about 1,000,000 years of torture? Eternal damnation? Isn't that a bit harsh for mistaken belief? Should thieves, drug dealers, and thugs forgive themselves? Don't we want them to regret the awful things they've done? But see, that's the secret medicine in self-forgiveness. You can only do it to the extent you own up to what you've done wrong. And that self-admission is what leads to understanding, compassion, and eventually doing right. We hope. As one forgives oneself, the light of inner love can start to shine through the thicket of blame. Once self-love replaces self-hate and blame, that love will spill over to others. In other words, when a person forgives himself, he will be more compassionate and seek to make amends for any way he has harmed. Self-forgiveness, then, is the antidote to being a victim and the remedy for a battered society. Yom Kippur is a holiday specifically about morality and making things right. All religions should have holidays solely about morality. Be a decent person. Be generous and respectful to everyone all the time. Return kindness, doubled. Give the benefit of the doubt. Protect the vulnerable. Provide people with the information they need to make good decisions. No more ghosting, or worse, shunning. Demonstrate character by being quick to offer an apology, even if you are hardly at fault. It allows the other side to save face and own up on their end. Then you can both get back to the important work of being friends. And never say, "Sorry, but you," just say, "Sorry." Then close your mouth and let it land. During Yom Kippur, Jews weigh what they have done right and what they have done wrong. It may be that all is not resolved in just that one day, but perhaps the value is in the weighing. We also atone, so we can start the new year with a clear conscience. That's why I try to get in all my sinning right now before the Day of Atonement, then get it all cleared out on Yom Kippur.
say, Shavuot.
Coming to the end of the show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. We started today's show about Yom Kippur and forgiveness with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called Jews. Then I played the second part of an interview I did with John at New Spirit Recovery Center, a beautiful detox clinic in Encino. We also heard Words and Music by Nahum. Also, some thoughts by me on Yom Kippur and forgiveness. And there's a musical underbed by me called Open Hand. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week. Mystic Pete out.